So we're starting a new semester on the Jewish home, and we're going to try to keep up a pace here. We'll start from scratch, but we'll keep moving, okay? We're discussing in this class the thing that should be most important to you. It is the basis for everything you're going to do in life. It is the potential. The Jewish home has the potential to be the source of happiness, tranquility, peace of mind. It is the vessel with which one can attain the greatest blessings in building one's home and one's families. If you think of something that has such great potential, then it's also understandable that it's very, very hard. And I said last semester, scary line that I never said before, but it's still true. Most of your friends will get divorced, those of them who actually get married. Because the statistic is today that over 50% of people who get married get divorced. That's a very scary statistic. So that means we really have to work hard. It's not so easy. One of the things that shock us is that it doesn't work on autopilot. There are a few times in life that things shock a person that way. When a woman gives birth and suddenly she has to nurse, and most women don't succeed. Most women have a very hard time when they start nursing, so they're flabbergasted. Wait a second, shouldn't this just work naturally? No. But I thought if I could give birth and everything else worked, why doesn't this work? Okay, it's worth reading up on it, getting lactation consultant. Suddenly you discover it doesn't work easily. People get married and they think either we're one of those couples that work or we're one of those couples that don't. So I thought we were one of those couples that work. That's why I got married to her. And suddenly I discover we're one of those couples that don't. So that's a big mistake. People think there are couples that work and couples that don't. And the answer is, no couple works. How do you like that? But every couple could work. Any couple that you see that it works well for them, it doesn't work well for them. They've worked very hard to make it look very easy. They've worked very hard to make it good. You know, when I was learning to be a magician, they told me, cardinal rule, every trick has to look hard. And in other forms of entertainment, they say you always have to make it look easy. Yeah? What? I'm a magician? Be careful, or I'll turn you into a rabbit. In marriage, the nature of marriage is that it's hard, and the nature of marriage is that it is quite possibly the hardest thing you'll ever do in life. There was once a lecturer who spoke about marriage, and he said, you wouldn't sit behind an F-15 and try to fly it without taking a number of lessons and getting good training. So why do you think you could go into marriage without some preparation? And a guy in the front row is chuckling, and he asks him, why do you laugh? And he says, I fly an F-15, and believe me, marriage is much harder. When we speak about marriage, we're talking about something which everyone wants to succeed at, and everyone would like to think that with the right person, I can do it right. And then everyone discovers that it's not what they thought it would be. I have a classical conversation that happens sometimes once or twice a week, where a guy comes in and I say, don't tell me, I'll tell you. And he says, no, you don't know. I say, yeah, I do know. What? What am I going to tell you? You're going to tell me that she's a witch, and that she's... And the guy looks at me and says, if you knew, why didn't you tell me before I married her? And the answer is that everyone who walks into marriage suddenly discovers that their spouse is egocentric, self-centered, difficult to live with, insensitive, unkind, doesn't understand me. Yeah, that's how it goes. But wait a second. Wait. I have friends. I lived in a dorm. I had a lot of relationships. I was the head Boy Scout. I was the MVP in the Army. And wherever I went to camp, everyone loved me. And at work, I'm the funniest guy. And even the female coworkers, they all like me. Are you kidding? I've been on dates. I've had friends. Why should I have any problems? Come on. You're talking about the next guy. Okay, so humor you and humor me. Just listen and wait, because every guy that walks into marriage thinks I've had relationships in my life before. There's no reason this should be tough. I'm going to be an understanding guy, and I'm a caring guy. I really am a caring guy. So if she's only normal, it can work. Right? Right. And if it doesn't work, then we know where the problem lies, right? Okay, so that's the attitude we all enter marriage with. We all, right? We all enter marriage thinking that more or less. I won't add a few more caveats, like she doesn't know how lucky she is. Line I actually heard numerous times. You'd be surprised. But people who are honest really think that. People who are dishonest think it too. They're just not going to say it. At any rate, marriage is not so simple. So why is it not so simple? Ah, that's what we're going to discuss. But marriage can be beautiful. Marriage actually has the potential of being the greatest thing. It is. How do we know? We look in the Tanakh. When Hashem wants to describe his relationship with the Jewish people, he chooses the comparison of a man and a woman. So I guess that can really represent true love. But it doesn't happen on autopilot. On the contrary, what happens on autopilot is we get on one another's nerves. So it requires a lot of work. So people say, I'm willing to work, but I don't understand her, right? She doesn't understand you either. So that's why we're here. We're here to study about what are the differences, what are the hardships that come up, and how do we make them work. So the first hardship that comes up is the thought, I made a mistake. Enemy number one of marriage is the thought, I made a mistake. I should not have married this person. That's the biggest problem people have for the first number of years of marriage. So when a person comes and tells me, I'm engaged, what do I say? Mazal tov, do you regret it yet? And the guy goes, no! I say, right. Everyone has moments where they regret it. People have moments where they regret it after they got engaged. People have moments where they regret it after they got married. That's the normal course of life. So we have a chasen and kala, and everything's going great, and they hit the wedding. And at the wedding, we have a badekin. You guys know what a badekin is? So going back, we're going to read in 2 weeks, the parsha where Rachel leaves her family. Sorry, not Rachel. Rebecca leaves her family. And her father, who is Rebecca's father? Besuel. Father drops dead the night before, but her brother and sister, they wish her off and they give her a blessing. So we have an ancient custom that before the kala comes to the chasen, so just as Rebecca veiled herself as she was coming to Isaac, the kala gets veiled. So the chasen veils her. The ancient custom was that the rabbis or her father would bless her before she goes into the chuppah. The Yekis still do that, the Germanic Jews, when they come to the Badekin, so her father blesses her, and the groom's father, he doesn't put his hands on her head, he puts his hands over her head, and he blesses her. And so they come to the Badekin, and here in Israel, after we finish davening the evening prayer, so we dance with the chasen to the kala, who he hasn't seen for a week, and he comes in, and he puts down the veil over her head, and then the chasen goes to the chuppah, and then the kala comes to the chuppah. So the chasen comes, he puts down the veil, what we call the badekin, and then he goes off to the chuppah. And then all the guys come and they're dancing and singing and they're waiting for the kala to come. And a minute passes and 2 minutes pass and 5 minutes pass and she's not getting off her chair. So her friend leans over and her friend says, Rachel, what's wrong? So she looks at her and says, should I marry him or not? Tough question, right? And she says, of course you should. You love him. She says, thanks. And gets up and starts walking to the chuppah. So Rachel looks at her best friend walking in that beautiful white gown and says, I just decided for her who she's going to marry. How can I do that? And she's walking down the aisle and Rachel goes off to a corner and she starts praying and crying. She says, Rabbon Shalom, forgive me. How could I have just done that? And as the chuppah goes on, everyone's singing and dancing, and she's crying. And they go into the cheder yichud, and she's praying, and finally they come out of the cheder yichud, the room where the chasen and kala go for seclusion after the wedding, for the first 20 minutes of the wedding. And before they go to the dancing, so the kala, the bride, calls Rachel over, and she says, I don't know how to thank you. I had a few minutes where I was confused out of the pressure, and I I don't know what came over me, and thanks to you, I didn't walk away from all of this. Now I have clarity, but I had a few minutes where things just went blank on me. Now I can tell you a few more stories along the same lines, but this happens. This happens not only when people are under pressure during the engagement period. It can happen at the wedding. Did I tell the story of our wedding last semester? Yeah, told the story. Okay.
Can you tell it? Tell us.
In a nutshell, at our wedding, there was a fire in the Cheder Yichud, and my first thought was, this is our first few minutes together, and the Talmud says that if a man and a woman merit, then they have Hashem's presence between them, and if they don't merit, then they have fire. And I'm saying to myself, these are our first minutes, and what am I seeing here? Fire. I didn't say a word to my wife, but these were my inner thoughts. So we can become very spiritual when we start questioning whether we made the right decision. And suddenly we have all these signs, and you say, oh boy, what's going on here? So no marriage can stand up to that. You have to know that the greatest marriage cannot stand up to the question, did I make the right choice? Because marriage involves many compromises that run about 300-400 times a day. On an average day, there are going to be about 300-400 things that you do that are just slightly annoying to your spouse. Slightly. But if you're sitting there thinking about, hey, should I go on with her or not? So you're going to have a really long list by the end of the day. And it's going to seem a little silly, but that list can really grow. Because at the end of the day, when two people are together all the time, so we develop expectations and we have little disappointments. And it can be the tone of voice, and it can be how quickly she hung up, and she didn't have time when I wanted to talk to her, and she spoke too long, and she spoke too short. And it can be a million little things, but if I'm writing a list, then I could very quickly fill up many pieces of paper. So marriage can't work that way. We have to make a decision. And it's a decision. It's mind over matter. The first thing you have to do, if you've chosen the person you want to marry, you have to decide, I will not think about this question. This is the right decision. I will not keep questioning this. And you'll say, but maybe I made the wrong decision. And I'll say, fine, think it through, reach a conclusion, and lock the decision and throw away the key. At some point, you have to make a decision. You want to make it a day before you get engaged? You want to make it a day after you get engaged? I'm not telling you when to make it. But when you make it, lock the decision and throw away the key. And anytime the question comes up and you ask yourself, you have to say, I'm not thinking about that. Now it is no longer a question of, do I want to stay married to the person? It's a question of, how are we going to make it work? Not a question of, will we make it work? It's a question of, how will we make it work? And there's a world of a difference. Yes, sir?
Have you ever been to a wedding where it was called off? In that situation, what do you do?
You as a guest?
Not called off as a, not as a guest. Like, what do you do for, like, the couple? Like, in terms of, what does one do to
have a whiskey?
Resurrect it. Who's has drinking the problem away?
Has that ever happened? When you
I know a friend where the daughter basically a week before canceled the wedding.
Not a week before, during the wedding.
During the wedding.
They've already been engaged. Just a few days before the wedding.
There a story here in Israel, in Nimrak or something, where the husband didn't show up, and one of the Gdolim, I don't know if it's urban legend or a real story, that one of the Gdolim said, whoever does marry this girl, yeah, he promised him something. I don't remember, but he ended up getting married, meaning to spare the embarrassment to this young lady.
I could tell stories, but I think you guys got the point. Let's move on. I could tell you a lot of stories. I think the first thing a person has to know is that it's normal to have this lingering doubt. We could break it up into the psychological terms of the better other and other things, but it doesn't matter. Bias, remorse, that's irrelevant. The fact of the matter is that in order for marriage to work, step one is to make a decision and decide this is not a part of the equation. I made this decision and now I have to figure out how to make it work. Step two is when you discover that your spouse is absolutely crazy. I've seen normal people, but she spends like there's no tomorrow. We made a deal, and look at what she's doing to the credit card. She maxed out 3 credit cards. We have a fight, and she's throwing dishes at me. Is that normal? I don't understand. There isn't a word that she says that isn't a lie. Okay, sometimes she tells the truth, but sometimes not. I ask her, did you burn the toast? And she says, no. Guys, you can say, I'm not scrubbing my wife, right? I'm scrubbing your wife. No, but seriously, every guy will walk in and say, a serious complaint. In every marriage, you will discover your spouse has about 2 to 3 serious flaws. Serious. Come on, am I supposed to live with this? And the answer is yeah. Yeah, we all have a few serious flaws in our character. You guys learned Shakespeare, yeah? The fatal flaw? Critical flaw? Yeah? So we all have fatal flaws. So the guy says, I explained it. There are so many times you cannot sit on the bus and order on eBay and read your credit card out loud so the whole bus hears it. You can't do that. And she doesn't get it. And she, so I say, fine, so you get her one of these disposable credit cards. So we can charge it with 200 shekels. And he says, I don't understand. Is she an imbecile? I explained it to her. And I say, so she has a weakness. And you have to figure out how to compensate. Why do I have to compensate? Of course you have to compensate, because you're married. Who says I have to stay married? No one says you have to stay married. But then you won't be able to be married to anyone. In life, we have weaknesses. We will discover that our spouse has serious weaknesses. My wife throws the match when it's still lit into the garbage. And I try to explain to her that if you do that, sometimes there are combustible things in the garbage. Work with it. But is this normal? Yes. How come every night my wife leaves the milk pitcher out and every morning it's spoiled? And every morning anew she looks at that milk pitcher and says, gee, they don't make milk like they used to. Shucks. Wait a second. Explain to me, is this normal? Yes. What do you mean it's normal? My neighbor's wife doesn't do it. She does her mishigas. And you do your mishigas. We all have things that we do that seem a little bit weird. Wrong. You shouldn't do that. So when we enter marriage, we have to be prepared. We're going to have surprises, and we're going to have our weaknesses and their weaknesses. And the key is, I'm not deciding if to remain married to this person. I have to think about how to remain married to this person. How will we make this work? We can make it work. The first step is to approach it this way. So my wife is a workaholic. You understand, we try to take a vacation, and she says, I can take a vacation, I just have to take my laptop along, you'll do the driving, and I'll do the working, and at some point when we get to Niagara Falls, I'll take a 20-minute break if my boss approves, I'll go out and look at the falls, and then I got to get back to work. Wait a second, shouldn't we have time together? She says, I told you we could have 20 minutes. Oh, so that seems terrible. Guys, every problem you encounter looks like it's terrible. How can I live with this? Every husband will tell you, how can I deal with this? And everyone thinks they're right. But life is that way, and every wife could paint the same pictures. How many times did I ask him, you get the bed, take your socks, and put them in the hamper? Why can't you do that? It's very simple. Why do I have to find half-eaten apples next to the computer? Is it so terrible to finish your apple or throw it out? I have to find the half-eaten apple. Is that so complicated? And if I ask him where the button is to turn on the computer, why does he get annoyed? So I asked him 3 times today before. So what? I don't understand. If I don't know, if he doesn't know something, I don't help him. How many times does he ask me which is milchik and phlegic? So I ask him where the button is to turn on the computer. So I called tech support and I waited online for a half hour and he was waiting on the phone and I couldn't figure it out. So? Guys, we will all deal with it. If we're ready to deal with it, if you're willing to love a person, then you're willing to accept the person and work with who they are. The day that a person makes a decision, I will work with this person, that's the day they start being happy. We walk into marriage, and very quickly we start discovering, wait a second, I didn't know this, I didn't know that, right? Why should I have to put up with this, that, or the other thing? But whoever you're going to marry, you're going to have to put up with things that seem crazy. believe it or not, they also feel like they're putting up with things that are crazy. I know it's hard to believe. I know. We all think that, come on, with me, it's fun to be married. Yes, sir?
Why do we advocate, although it's not advocated in like Jewish society, to live with your wife like, before you marry her, but in secular society, you get to see who you're sort of, who you're going to be living with. And you get a lovely idea of your compatibility in terms of living together. So why don't we do that?
There's the real answer and the answer you need to hear. I'm short on time, so I can't give you either. but on Thursday night, I'll be happy to revisit the question. I think it's an important question to discuss. I think that if you look online, a lot of people will say true love is before you're married. Why? If they were checking it out and now marriage should be so much better, why is it that people can live a wonderful life as roommates, but when they get married and suddenly they have to deal with real life, with kids, with the obligations of marriage, then suddenly everything falls apart. And I had so many couples who came with this challenge, and I challenged them back, and the divorce rate is much higher with people who do that. Very interesting.
That is higher.
Check the statistic. I'm saying the numbers don't support the claim. Yeah, the theory.
There's other factors involved in psychological, where people don't live with each other before they get married. I mean, tell you to stick it out.
You can make that argument, but you've already lost your argument. Meaning if the numbers don't support your argument, so then you can argue that I don't have a counter argument, but you don't have an argument either.
But you brought these numbers biased to your argument.
Right.
So I can bring numbers biased.
Show me. That's what I'm saying. You're assuming that if a couple is intimate before marriage, then their marriage works out better. And I'm saying I don't know of any support for that claim, any factual support. On the contrary. When he said live together, he didn't just mean that. Saying any, bring any support.
Well, one thing would be that in secular society, which is bigger than a religious society in today's world, there are a lot more couples that live together before they get married.
That's the statistics of divorce are coming from.
So the statistics of divorce will be higher just because there's more people,
percentage-wise, no.
If you've been with people before you marry, and you get married, you compare that person to other people who've been married.
Well, the person that gets to live with someone before they get married will probably have the mindset that they can choose other people, or that they have experienced other people.
So that's so another good problem, sort of, right?
So it sort of sticks with one person, has a more closed mindset about marriage, and says you have to stay with that person the entire time.
Right.
There's no other options. So you're a lot more conducive to staying with that person than a person.
Okay, so you just gave supportive reasons why a person shouldn't do that, right? 100%.
It's reasons why a person shouldn't do that, but it doesn't necessarily...
I think you're going in circles. Yeah,
going in circles.